Oh, and we are live. Hello, welcome everybody. Highfalutin Speak On podcast number 62. What is going on? Thank you for listening. It is your host, Mario and Brian. Mario, what's going on?
What's up, everyone? What? Getting excited for feeling a little colder outside. I'm liking it.
No, it's not. It's going to be 94 goddamn degrees tomorrow. It's not feeling cold at all. It's summer is holding on. It's
When that hurricane ripped through last week, it actually felt pretty damn good. I got to say, it was like down to like in the, I don't know, high 60s the one night. I was like, oh, this is nice.
Oh, last weekend was beautiful. Labor Day weekend. I mean, we were up in Connecticut and it was probably close to 60. I mean, it was getting chilly. It was great. It
was awesome. I was like, I could almost smell sweater weather coming out.
But then the last couple days, it has been, I think it was like 90 or something today.
Dude, if anybody's been watching the Instagram, last week was, let's bring on some pumpkin beers. It feels a little cold out.
Yeah, but now you got to put them all back. Keep them in the fridge for a few weeks.
That's the set. They're like booze. Once you take them out, they're out. Ladies, once you take them out, they're out. They're out there.
Bring them out. Bring them out.
That's right.
So, yeah, so it's officially after Labor Day. You can't wear white shoes. You can wear white ski boots, I guess. But we're going to keep pushing on. So thank you guys so much for listening. Check us out, skibumpodcast.com. Send us an email, skibumpodcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on social media, twitter.com/skibumpodcast, facebook.com/skibumpodcast, and instagram.com/skibumpodcast.
See, our listeners are so smart, Brian. Like, we don't even have to tell them anymore. We're everywhere. We're on Pinterest.
Yeah.
This week.
That's right. We started a Pinterest account. You can go on iTunes and subscribe and rate us. We'd really appreciate that. Stitcher, Overcast. We're everywhere now. We're ubiquitous.
Everywhere. Ubiquitous. That's right.
Ubiquitous.
I think Pinterest might be good. Like, I was playing around with that. We could just put all the links there. Maybe every week, create like a weekly page or something. I don't know. We got to talk about that, but it's a cool place for it.
We got big plants. Let me tell you, big plants.
Big plants. But we have some cool stuff out there already. So take a look at that.
Yeah, please check it out. What's the URL?
We are Highfalutin Ski Bums. Let me just double check. Just Highfalutin. Well, because Highfalutin Ski Bum is too long, it's Highfalutins.
Highfalutins.
With a highfalutins.
With a highfalutins. It's like some sort of weird, funky college that'd be in like New Hampshire. The Manchester Highfalutins.
But if you look up Highfalutin Ski Bum, we're there. That's us.
Okay, nice. So yeah, check us out on Pinterest.
First name Highfalutin, second name Ski Bums.
Perfect.
And has our information there. We have a page for our podcast notes, and then we have another page just fun crap right now, which I think that's public. I think I put it out there public. Yeah, it's public. So
cool. So we'll keep adding stuff onto there, and you can check us out. And
you gotta look at the Corbett's thing, and they have this thing with igloos on there. It's pretty cool.
Ooh,
a lot of cool stuff out there.
Nice. All right. So as we start every week, Mario.
Oh yeah, it's that time. Time for the weekly flavor.
Yes. So what are you drinking tonight?
So today I went for a good old favorite. Actually, somebody was telling me about visiting the brewery recently, and that's another thing I have to do down in Delaware. Good old Dogfish Head. So I have a Palo Santo Marron, which is a malt beverage aged in Palo Santo wood. So
nice.
This is a brown ale, unfiltered. And it actually has a nice, it's not too boozy and it's not too dark. It's kind of in the, you know, it's kind of like what you think about, like, oh, I just feel like having like a, you know, darker beer, but nothing like too crazy, like, you know, oak barrel age or anything like that. Has a little bit of caramel, vanilla, a little bit sweeter, but not too sweet, not like syrupy. I actually like this. I usually don't like syrupy, darker, sweet beers because they're a little too like, just syrupy, and this isn't like that at all. Pretty good, pretty smooth.
Nice. Yeah, I think I've had that one once before, and it was really good. You're pretty spot on with your description of it there.
Yeah, pretty flavorful. How about you, Brian?
Well, I am breaking something out from good old Ski Bum Week last December.
Peels? So, I'm joking.
Peels. Oh, that's all we had was Genesee and Peels the whole time.
Anything with Milwaukee in the name?
That's right.
So, good thing we don't have that as a rule for Ski Bum Week, because that would be a pretty bad week.
The first rule of Ski Bum Week is there are no rules.
Boom.
Yes. Oh, so, I'm having something from Lawson's Finest Liquids, and no, it is not Sip of Sunshine. It is Carrier Mild from the, I guess they worked with the Carrier Roasting Company on this. So oh, wow. It is inspired by a pub-style English Dark Mild. This evolving creation is brewed in partnership with Carrier Roasting Company. Each batch features a unique origin and roast of beans with a different set of ingredients and processes. So this is a, it's dark. I mean, it's a dark beer, but it's really light. It's only like a 4.2 percenter. Lot of big coffee flavor in this thing.
Really? And it's that, yeah. It's low in,
very low in alcohol. Yeah. It's drinkable. It's again, it's not what you expect. I'll be honest, I don't love it, but it's different. So it's got a lot of flavor to it. Again, not something usually I'm a big fan of the big gnarly IPAs. So this is outside my comfort zone, which is good to be outside your comfort zone and try different things and explore who you are, what you believe in. So I'm enjoying this right now.
Nice. Where did you get that again?
You know what? I was trying to remember. I think it was at the first place we got Hetty Topper. Where so they was on like one or two four packs. And it was up in, was it Waitsfield?
Right, one of those places. So it was on our beer hunting quest.
Oh, yeah. It was that little general store where there was like the ultimate Vermont picture, which was you holding Hetty Topper next to a Subaru with a Bernie Sanders sticker.
Feel the burn.
This could not be any more Vermont if it tried.
Feel the burn.
Yeah. That's awesome. But I am drinking it out of a Dogfish Head tulip glass. So, you know, there is nice. That.
Now, if you use that as a bong after drinking it, now you're talking Vermont right there.
There you go. That's really feeling the burn.
Feel the burn.
Yes. And speaking of bongs and feeling the burn in Vermont, we've got our other new feature. We've got Frank's Find of the Week. So
what do we got for Frank's Find of the Week? Because I was looking at this, and I actually like what he was recommending.
So our pal Frank has been sending us some pretty awesome tips and recommendations over the last couple of weeks. And last week, we had one of his, I think it was Green Crack, his cannabis recommendation. This week,
I spoke about
cannabis recommendation. This one's called Blue Cheese.
Cheese.
So Blue Cheese is an indica cross created by crossing the blueberry male with an original UK cheese. The sweet and savory smells of berry and blue cheese combine to create a creamy, unique flavor reminiscent of the original cheese. The heavy indica effects will help you feel relaxed at the end of the day and can provide relief for muscle spasms, pain, and stress. So this seems like the kind of cannabis you would want to have if you were in Colorado or Washington or Oregon after a nice long day of skiing. Seems like it would put you in a really good place. You're in the hot tub.
Nice.
Have a couple hits on this. Everything will feel nice and gooey and liquidy. The joints will feel, you know, flexible and happy and no bone on bone. And
whoa, bone on bone. That's a little racy there.
Bone on bone, baby. This is like a pretty, pretty nice strain.
Yeah, Leafly, which you sent the link for. They have that huge relaxed, like big relaxed profile. I like the, the pictogram they have. Very relaxed.
The bar chart there, you mean?
The bar chart. Yeah. So very relaxed, very happy. I'm like, I like that.
What more do you want?
Scares me. The only thing that scares me is the sleeping, because I fall asleep like all the time.
Well, most of us do every day, actually.
When I partake, I tend to fall asleep like right away.
Yeah, but medical, it's good for stress, pain, insomnia, depression, lack of appetite.
That's because I'm chronically depressed and I'm chronically stressed. See, if I had this all the time, if it was legal here, I wouldn't fall asleep right away because I wouldn't be as stressed.
Just there you go. It has all come full circle. The student has become the teacher. ipso facto.
And all I got to say to that is, jeez.
So thank you, Frank, again for your recommendation.
Factor Beads. Factor Beads.
There you go. All right. So now, let's set up ski news. So first off, now this is something that's quite important and topical to us. But Whistler has gotten their first snow of the season.
Boom.
That is right. Now, again, nothing significant, nothing skiable, but back on last Friday, Whistler got its first snow of the season. So they're showing pictures of it. So down when you're like lower on the mountain, there's nothing. But up in the alpine area up top, there is a nice little white coating. It's almost as if you got a funnel cake and you got some powdered sugar and you sprinkled it like a nice healthy dose of, you don't care about your gut flora or your cholesterol or your diabetes, like a really healthy, nice, you know, shaking of powdered sugar over your funnel cake. That's what
shake
Whistler looks
shit
like.
Shit out of that sugar right there.
Yeah, it looks nice.
It does look cool.
It's a nice start. There were a few other places that got snow this week too, but it is of particular interest to us, and we will get into that more on another podcast coming soon.
And they have more snow forecasted. It's not going to end there. It's not just like a freak little storm, right?
Oh, no. The ruckus has begun, and the ruckus will not be stopped.
Bring the ruckus.
Yes.
Bring in that ruckus. All right, next up, we got a 11-year-old kid falls from a New Zealand chairlift.
Come on, kid.
Come on, kid. Stay on that damn thing. So Jack Cluley slipped from a lift at Mount Hutt before his father could lower the safety bar. So quick thinking, patrol saved the boy from injury. So they're saying, you know, the two boarded the lift and the boy slipped and his father grabbed him, was able to hold on to him by his jacket, and then the lift kept going and he was dangling 10 meters, which is, what's that in American terms?
30 feet?
About 30 feet above the ground. He could have survived that. Just, you know, you got to fall right and roll a little bit. But patrollers grabbed some safety cushions from a nearby pylon, held it in place, and then the kid fell to the ground and they kind of caught him. It was pretty cool, pretty scary, they said. And after the incident, they skied down and then joined the ski line. So
that's the best thing. What's the second best thing about it? The best thing is that the kid didn't get hurt, obviously. But the second best thing is he's like, just going to ski down and get back in line again and do it all over.
See, that's where the Europeans have the edge up on some of the Americans. Not all the Americans, but some of the Americans, because they're like, oh, well, you know, this happened. Life goes on, and I'm going to keep skiing. There's no, oh, my God, I'm traumatized. I got to sit inside the lodge now. No, come on, kid. You're going to ski a little more.
Europeans do that, but this guy was New Zealish. Is that what they are?
Yeah.
New Zealandish?
New Zealandish?
New Zealand?
Was he from the UK, though? Because this was carried by a UK paper.
I think he was a New Zealander.
New Zealander? New Zealander?
New Zealandish? Yeah.
He's a Zoolander?
He was a New Zoolander.
All right.
Yeah, I believe they were from New Zealand. So
that's a whole different part of the world there. That's like different, you know.
Different hemispheres. They got their toilets flushed differently. Like, they got different animals.
Was he a hobbit?
Yeah, there's a whole other things going on down there. But yeah, that's it's good that this young fella.
Well, I actually not hurt. I actually worked with a guy whose wife was from New Zealand. And they would go back there to visit. And he would try to stay as long. You know, he used all his vacation in one shot. And I remember talking to him about it. He said, they limit you on, even as an American, how long you come and stay there, because people want to go there and just stay. They said they love it. So it's kind of like they make sure they kick people out.
Yeah, they don't really want us there very long. They want us to come, drop a few bucks, and then leave.
That's right. They're hot air. If they had a casino at the airport and you get the hell out, they'd love that.
Yeah.
Well, don't take our muscles, any of the like natural shit we got going on, because you guys will come here with your garbage thrown and you're smoking, and that's why they don't want us there.
Well, it takes forever to get there too, so you know, once you're there, you're like, oh, this is awesome, why would I want to leave if I'm already here? So
yeah, That's a long-ass trip, man.
It is a journey, yeah. Especially from where we are. It's probably close to 24 hours.
Yeah, I've heard of that in the Philippines as being the worst trips, like longest trips ever.
Oof.
Crazy.
Not good. All right, next up. So, just this week, a new book by Warren Miller is out. It's called Freedom Found, and it pretty much tells the story of Warren Miller and how he came to be the Warren Miller we all know and love. And it mentions that he kind of had a dysfunctional and unhappy childhood, and started just creating these thoughts and this vision of what he wanted to be and do, and somehow he was able to take these dreams and these concepts and ideas and turn into a real lifestyle. So, they say that he essentially created the subculture of the ski bum.
That's
You know,
awesome.
just kind of, hanging out in living in the ski area parking lots and just doing what you got to do with crackers and ketchup, making it work. That's how he got his start.
He's 92 now. 91 or 91. He'll be 92 on October 15th.
Wow.
Boy, he's keeping it real, man. I like it.
It's amazing. And he really had no training in motion picture production when he started all this. He
Great.
just just started filming, just started making it happen. You know what? He's kind of like what we are to skiing podcasting.
I think you're right.
We didn't know what we were doing.
He
He
just
still
has a
doesn't know what
better
we're doing.
voice. He has a better voice.
That's what he thinks.
That's true. That's true.
Yes, this new book is available on Amazon. You can get it there, Kindle. There is no audiobook version. And I did tweet out at the good folks at Warren Miller Entertainment, but they did not respond to my tweet. So I may have to tweet at them again.
Oh, wow.
I demand respect and attention, Warren Miller Entertainment.
All right, so I just looked up. Men's Journal has 10 things you didn't know about Warren Miller.
Oh.
So his ne'er-do-well father struggled for years to make it as a radio sitcom character called Cy Tusey. His maternal grandfather and great uncle were inventors who designed an escape box for Houdini, the monster mask for the original Frankenstein, and a dental tool still in use. He made the University of South Carolina, USC varsity basketball team as a walk-on. Ballin'. Led the evacuation of his WW2 Navy crew. Oh, way back, man. WW2.
The big
Became
one.
the big one. He was inspired by Groucho Marx, popularized skiing for Janssen Sportswear. Wow. He once faced a bodyguard's gun as he filmed the Yugoslavian dictator, Tito. Isn't that crazy? So he's out there filming, and the dude comes up and says, don't film.
Jeez.
Claims he was the first to take Hobie Alter on a catamaran, who's a surfboard pioneer. In Sun Valley, which is where he started a lot of his filming in Sun Valley, which that was on my list of like places to go. Our buddy Janet, who's going to be in the ski house this year, Brian, for FYI,
Oh.
she has a place out in Sun Valley. She
Oh.
rents. Yeah. So she used to live out there. She was a instructor for a little bit and bought a place. And anyway, but Sun Valley is supposed to be nice, and that's still a lot for skiing. He watched Bobby Kennedy get turned away from the lodge in the dining room for dressing without a necktie in Sun Valley.
Jeez.
Awesome.
Huh.
In Vail while skiing, presidential candidate Jack Kemp and two former astronauts, Alan Shepard and Scott Carpenter, asked him to take a picture of him. And notable quote, "No one is ever too old to do something really dumb."
I like
I can account for that because there's a lot of dumb shit I do all the time.
it.
But yeah, I love Warren Miller. I love his movies, inspired a lot of people. And then, things have developed. You got TGR, you got a lot of other great film companies out there. But I think he started a lot of people like looking at ski films.
Yeah, they probably, those like TGR and all them and Matchstick Productions. They, who knows that they would even be around if it wasn't for, Warren Miller's pioneering. So.
Yeah,
Yeah,
and
it should be.
popularizing skiing and boarding,
Oh, yeah, big time. So that'll be cool to check that book out, and also to check out the new movie coming up.
We got to get invited to his birthday party.
Yeah, right?
That'll be baller as hell. Yeah. Oh, who's – somebody was telling me they were actually hanging out someplace with warm – oh, it was some – the salesperson, so I don't know if it's true.
That's probably a lie.
Probably a lie. They were saying about 10 years ago they went – to where he goes, I guess it's Vail Mountain Club or one of those places, Deer Valley. I don't remember where, but he said he was out and they were going to hang out at somebody's place and he's hanging out with all these muckety mucks and yada, yada, yada. He's like, oh, it's Warren Miller's house. I was like, that's pretty cool.
Nice.
If it was true. I have no idea if it was true. I couldn't validate it. So.
If it was true.
That's when it almost sunk in, but I was like, whatever. So, Brian, why don't you take the next one? Because I know.
Next up.
Yeah, boy.
So this was from Powder. They they put this out last week on the website. And it's Where Are They Now? Tommy Moe.
Boom. We know where he is.
Oh, we know exactly where he is. He's in his garage looking at his monoski, wondering when we're going to come pick it up and go try it out.
He's doing a monoski off of Corbett's, man.
Monoski-a-palooza.
He's crazy.
Yeah, so talked about, obviously, Tommy Moe, you know, he Olympic gold medal ski racer. He won in 94 in Lillehammer and beat the hometown favorite, which was crazy because he really came out of nowhere to win that gold. He was, you know, he was doing okay in the World Cup that year, but he wasn't a favorite or anything. But he ended up retiring at 28 and now he's 46. He's living in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, because why wouldn't you?
Where he lived after retiring, right? He just moved.
Yeah, right. Well, even after the Olympics, he went back there.
Awesome, great place.
Mountain ambassador, doing that now. He takes private lessons into the backcountry, which we know for a fact because we did it with him. An awesome guy, very, you know, very funny, very just.
He plays cards with some highfalutin people, which we know from talking to him as well.
Allegedly, yeah.
Allegedly. Not for money, but just for fun.
For funsies, yeah.
If the IRS is listening, just saying. Tax purposes.
And he also does guiding at a heliski lodge up in Alaska at Tordrillo Mountain Lodge.
Just another little side business.
Yeah, he's like a partial owner in that venture as well.
Awesome.
So he's doing that, you know, usually as the season's winding down in Jackson.
That's so cool. I remember, like, so, of course, we talked about it on one of our previous shows, but we went out on a day with Tommy Moe last year when we were in Jackson, and he hung out with him the whole day, and he was a really cool guy, really down to earth. And one of the cool things he was talking about was he has two daughters, and he was, like, talking about the difference. Like, one of them's really good, like, technically, and the other one was kind of crazy. Like, so it was kind of neat to see, like, he's like, even he was saying, he's like, I don't understand that, like, why they're so different, but that's just how they are. And he's really, really seemed down to earth.
Yeah, he was a really cool dude.
He was going to hang out with us, but he actually had to go pick up the kids after skiing with us, which is pretty funny.
Yeah.
We're like, come on, Tommy, with a big group. We're going to go drink. And he's like, oh, I'd love to. Normally I would, but his wife was doing something. And I was like, good to say, you know, regular guy.
Yeah, it's funny. In the article, he talks about, that question asked him was, what's one of the biggest hardships you've come across in skiing? And he goes, I'll be honest with you, it was the partying. Like, I had so many good days where you just go to the bar to celebrate. He's like, I'm at a point now where I'm just trying to be sober.
Yeah. I imagine that's, yeah.
What if we want to party and buy him a couple drinks? And he's like, oh, man, let's see the gold medal. Can I wear it? Yeah, all right. Tommy Moe,
go Goldie. Remember you yelling on the lift?
Go Goldie.
We saw some dude with like a whole, what is it, gold shirt, a gold jacket.
Oh, he had like a gold jacket and a gold helmet.
It's awesome.
And we were on the lift with him, yeah, going up, in Jackson. And he's like, yeah, Goldie.
You go, Goldie. Awesome.
Yeah, he was a good dude. So if you're ever out in Jackson, and you want to do your backcountry tour, pay the extra couple bucks. Get Tommy Moe to be your guide. It'll be
totally worth hanging out with Tommy. He's a really cool guy.
Yeah, very cool guy. And lots of great insights, too. He knows the mountain. I mean, he knows all the little ins and outs and the things that aren't even marked, what they name them. I mean, he he really knows all about it. So you'll get some tremendous insight that you won't get anywhere else.
And he has these pretty cool random stories. Like, we're hanging out looking. He's like, look at that cliff. And we're like, oh, yeah, that's pretty cool. He's like, yeah, you could ski up to that and you get a stop. He's like, I have a friend that, like, jumped off of that and, like, you know, base jumped off. Like, all these random stories. So it's kind of pretty cool.
He's like, yeah, two people died right over there. They just went over that thing. We call it Jersey Shore now. And they went over and fell to the death. And, yeah. So all kinds of both good and bad stories that he had for us.
Let's just say he knows about the highfalutin ski bums. Just saying.
he's a man in the know.
That's
like
right.
All you good folks listening are as well. You're in the same category as gold medalist Tommy Moe. So,
Tommy Moe. You go, Goldie.
You go.
Gold medal, man. Gold medal skiing. Come on.
It's a beautiful thing. All right, next up.
All right, now I was avoiding this too a little bit because this is just a shit show continues. So Jay Peek of Vermont is still under investigation for Ponzi scheme, SEC investigation for like mismanaging money. Like there's a whole shit show going on there.
It's all alleged right now.
Yeah, it's all alleged. They're not shutting anything down, which is good. And even if they catch people, I think they're persecuting the people. And it seems like they're letting the resort continue to operate. Potentially, this may be a destination for us to ski this year. It depends if they're still operating. But our ski club is running a trip up there. So looking at it and being like, yeah, it's a pretty good trip. But it's a late sign up later in the season. And I think they're waiting to see what shakes out too, which is kind of a good idea.
Yeah. Is it still going to be there for us to go to?
Exactly.
Is that freaking tram going to be fixed?
You know how it would be. Like we would book it and we'd be like on the way up there and be like, oh, this weekend they're actually shutting down. I'm like, God damn it.
Actually, speaking of that, there's someone at work that I found out. He went to the Dominican Republic with his girlfriend on like a – this is a totally random story here. Went to the Dominican Republic with his girlfriend a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
And, you know, he was there for like a week and went to the airport to fly home and, you know, showed his boarding pass on his phone. And they were like, oh, this airline hasn't operated out of the Dominican Republic for like 7 days.
Oh,
like, wait, what? He's like, I flew in this airline and then they just
book a charter
servicing the freaking country. Like, how do I get home?
Wow.
So he had to like go back to the resort and luckily he had friends that were still there, was able to like, you know, just crash in their room for the night and had to buy a whole new flight home, like new tickets to fly home because the airline just stopped running.
Just went out of business. That's what you get on TravelZoom, man. I'm telling you, those deals are great, but you just got to hope they're operating on the return trip.
Sometimes it's better spending another 100, 200 bucks to make sure your airline actually will be working and be in existence.
So let's just say you're on the way to Dominican Republic and they decide midair, like, we're done. You guys aren't getting paid. So they just land anywhere and you're kind of stuck, right?
Or even worse, the pilot just starts parachuting out.
Parachute.
You're on your own, son.
I don't work here anymore.
I hope you were good at Microsoft Flight Simulator because you're going to put those skills to work right now.
God damn. I would land that shit. I want to see that Sully movie. I would land that fucking thing. Bam, right in there. He's a genius. He's a genius with a 747. Land that bitch right in the water. Right in the Hudson, man.
The WAP genius.
It didn't even cause a WAP genius. It didn't even cause a commotion. I remember that. Like, I think I was working in Weehawken at the time, right on the edge. And I was like, I didn't hear about it until it was done. And it was like, oh, yeah, some dude, landed a plane in the Hudson. Okay, cool. And you just keep going about what you're doing.
No one even noticed. It was just like, oh, yeah, they're in the water. It's cool. I think it was like January, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, but the funniest part, there's so much, like, you've been there, Brian. Like, there's so much freaking ferry traffic that I'm like, he didn't hit a ferry boat or something. He just, no, everything's fine. It's all cool.
All good.
Awesome. Everybody got out. Cool.
Yeah.
But Tom Hanks is doing this, so you know it's going to be good.
Forrest Gump lands a plane in the Hudson River.
Damn. I get Tom Hanks and Opie Cunningham. They make movies like nobody else, man.
They really do. Well, this is Clint Eastwood, though, this one.
Oh, Clint Eastwood makes a good movie. Oh, freaking awesome.
That boy good.
That boy good. Okay, so get back to J-Peak.
What's going on in J-Peak?
Will it be open? So while the shit show ensues, right, there is a person – let's see. So they're calling him the receiver for JP. So I don't know if he is like the person in charge now, temporarily, whatever. But anyway, there was an offer of $93 million to buy JP. In the middle of the commotion, say, we'll buy it for $93 million. You take the money, do whatever the hell you ask, got to do with it, and we're just going to take over everything, all the operations. And they turned it down. So, I mean, JP, they have a water park there. They have, you know, a nice tram, and they have, like, some of the best tree skiing, like, around in the Northeast.
Yep.
So maybe they're holding out for more money, but I was like, I think we were speculating about this for a while, but like $93 million, it's a lot of goddamn cash.
Yeah, there's some weird like SEC comments too, saying that the stated value of Jay Peak is $87 million based on projections of revenue increased of 5% from last year.
Yeah, so why wouldn't you take it if they're appraising it at 87?
Well, they're saying that an expert says the current value is about $44 million. So that 93 is more than double of what its stated value is. So
yeah,
there's
a
lot.
But the problem, they're saying the value, including like the potential back tax or whatever, like they're doing their crazy math. 87, I can understand. Okay, that's the projection, you know, of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
But the value is, what are you going to pay for what you're perceived, like, appraised value of the place, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, so there's still some shadiness going on there, and it doesn't really seem like anything is going to get resolved anytime soon. But they're saying that Jay Peak Resort will remain open and operational. So that's the one thing they're going for us.
I'm just thinking Vail Associates walks in there with $100 million, and they're buying that shit, and SEC is saying, oh, thanks a lot, because somebody's getting greased. There's a little cash going behind the scenes. Just saying. Then there's going to be another investigation on top of that.
There's all kind of just weird things where they have like these, you know, these like shadow, you know, corporations set up, and that the address doesn't match, like the name that has been filed under, like that address doesn't exist or something. Like, there's all kinds of weird, just weird, questionable things that have happened in this whole process. So
see, now I thought your Dominican Republic story was going to go to, oh, the owner of JP is out of here, that's why we can't let you
I wish it were that easy.
So like some crazy offshore like link or something like that, because at this point I'm like, whatever, I mean, they could be smuggling crack for all I know. It's gotten weirder and weirder by the day,
and there's no resolution in sight, it looks like.
Oh yeah, it's gonna go on for a while.
Yep. All right, so that wraps up ski news for the week. So now, on to our main topic. And we are calling it Skiing Things. It's a bit of a takeoff on the Netflix original series Stranger Things. So, Labor Day has come and gone.
I used the font on Pinterest. And on,
nice, right?
Cool. Instagram. That thing worked.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, it was a... If you've seen the show, it takes place in 1983. Everything is like perfectly 80s. The soundtrack, the design of the logo, and there's a website where you can put in your own text, and it'll display it in the same, you know, the same format and type as the logo for the show. So we created a cool little Skiing Things logo that we put up for that'll be the featured image on this week's podcast, on the show notes on the website at skibumpodcast.com, so you can check it out. So Labor Day has come and gone, and now it's time to shift our focus to skiing. Every ski magazine, ski publication is starting to put out their the previews of the new gear for the year. So we're going to talk about new skis and just what are skis, what's the differences in them, and hopefully give you guys a little bit of help and tips and advice for when you're going out and looking for a new pair this year.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Skis are the thing. I got to say the last like 2 years, like the focus has been on all skis. Like, I don't know why, but like boots. Yeah. Everybody's looking at boots, but everybody's been focusing on like the shape, the size, the width of skis. It's gone nuts.
Yeah, it really has. Things have changed a good amount, and it's nice just also kind of starting at square one and learning everything about it, so that when you do figure out what you like and what works for you, you can, you know, get the right thing so you're, you know, having the most fun when you're out there.
Now, I have to say, Brian got skis last year, and he did a lot of research, not just on the best skis, but on the construction of them. So a lot of this is you know, what we're going to talk about today was, like, fostered by his, like, just desire to know, like, how and why is this a better ski, and how is it made?
And I will tell you that I did my research, and the skis that I bought unskied. They didn't even exist the day
sight
before.
Unskied.
Sight unskied. And they turned out to be awesome.
Number one ski?
Spoiler alert, number one ski in Powder Magazine.
Just saying.
A little magazine that, you know, you guys may have heard of, Powder Magazine.
Powder.
Yeah, I did the research. I did try the 100s at one point. I did demo them on a terrible day, which was probably not indicative of the right conditions. But I did the research. I knew what kind of ski I was looking for, what conditions I'd be skiing in for the most part, and I am gonna share all that information and actually use it as well to find another pair of skis this year. For something a little fatter, a little more powder friendly for our West Coast adventures this year.
Well, so, now personally, when you selected your skis last year, like, how did you go about that? Did you demo? Like, did you look for free demos? Like, how did you work that? Because I think that's always the intimidating part. Like, people are like, yeah, I'd love to demo skis. I just don't know how to get involved with that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I knew what I had, and my skis. I had the Vocal RTM 80s, and they're awesome for, you know, groomers, for, you know, being on the mountain in resort. They were great. I love them. They're still great skis, but I was looking for something that was more adventurous, more faster, something that could take, you know, more in the trees and was, you know, could be taken, you know, in less groomed conditions. So I knew, like, where I wanted to ski and how I wanted to ski. And then it was a matter of figuring out, what sort of guts of the ski would be the right thing for what I'm looking for. And then I did do a few demos, which kind of helped me narrow down what I wanted. So, like, metal or carbon fiber or more wood. At Killington, they had a free demo day, and I think I went through at least five pairs of skis. And
that,
again,
demo
it really helps you.
Sweet. Especially because it was free. It's like, there's no hooks on it. You just, like, go out and you try some skis.
It really helps you narrow down what you like and what you want. So,
and I have to say, on a free demo day, those people are motivated to get you into a good ski, something that you're going to like, because they don't have you on the hook for anything. So they're like, we just want you to try a good ski that you try and are like, I can't live without the ski.
Yep. Yeah, that's the way to do it. So the first thing off, so we got to look at the skiing construction, like what they're made of. And, you know, basically there's a bunch of different kinds of parts to them. And they're made of plastics, fiberglass, carbon, core material, metals, rubber, steel edges, and base material. And one of the first things you'll notice is the sidewall construction. So there's four kinds of sidewall construction. So what that is, you know, your top sheet, which is what, when you're looking down at your skis, that's the top of the ski right there. The thing you're looking straight at when you're looking down. And the way it wraps around the rest of the ski is different. There's different styles to it. So cap is one of the ones that are most popular. And what it is that top sheet, it folds over the edges of the core material. So that provides weight savings because it doesn't have a full cover, but also provides a little bit more protection than what they call a sandwich, which is just the top when it's covered. The half cap, that's just a cap on a top, and then the sandwich construction on the bottom, which is, you know, like almost like a piece of bread on a sandwich. There's nothing kind of overlapping on the sides. It's just,
well, I gotta keep saying sandwich. I'm getting hungry now,
dude. I'm getting hungry too.
I keep saying sandwich. I'm like, dude, I'm getting fucking hungry. You talking about? I'm thinking ice cream sandwich too. I could go for an ice cream sandwich. Just saying.
And then there's also the hybrid, which this is one thing I've noticed when, you know, doing the research. There's so many like, so there's always like two ways of doing things, you know, in the past, and now they're starting to hybridize everything. So what this is, you have the fusion construction. So you have the cap at the tip and the tail, and then you have just kind of the sandwich construction in the middle, where it's not really as, you know, doesn't seem as important. So yeah, it's cool and interesting to see how that's changed. And when you look at the different skis, it's one of those things you probably don't pay attention to as much, but if you're getting really specific and you're really trying to determine if you want something lighter and that's important to you, you really want to check out the what kind of sidewall your ski is built with. Because that'll,
I gotta say, you demo a few different ones and you realize the difference, right?
You really do. Yeah, that's one of the big ones.
The weight's a big difference. Like, you're like, wow, these are lighter than the other ones I just tried. And they kind of look the same, but you're like, wow. And then you start looking at the construction, you're like, oh, I see the difference now. Like, the weight versus the power and the stiffness and all that crap. You can just see by, like, trying it, right?
Yep, absolutely. The next piece here is the turn radius. So every ski is rated with a turn radius. And it talks about, you know, when you're making a turn, is it going to be like a quick, snappy little turn, or are you looking for more big, sweeping turns? And a lot of it depends on what sort of terrain you're going on. So if you're looking for something more of like a racing ski, that's going to be, you're going to have something that's got a much smaller turn radius. So that can make those quick, snappy turns. There's less ski to swing back and forth when you're on those narrow racing skis. And your material is going to be a lot firmer. And then when you're looking at more of a powder ski, that's more of softer material and it's a larger turn radius. It's usually about 22 meters and up. So your powder skis are going to have something like the higher number turning radius, and the carving racing skis are going to have something with a lower turning radius. The majority of skis that you want are right in the middle, 70 to 22. That's pretty much the all mountain skis. That's going to give you, you know, the best bang for your buck all over the mountain.
But especially on the East Coast too, right? So there's East Coast, West Coast, powder versus non-powder. It depends what you're skiing, right?
It totally depends on what you're skiing and where you want to go with your skis.
Because even East Coast powder is totally different than West Coast powder. Like night and day.
Well, one exists and one doesn't is really what it comes down to, or at least last season.
You get 4 inches on the East Coast, you're like, wow, this is powder day. You get 4 inches on the West Coast, you're like, yeah, we got a little sprinkle.
Yep. All right, cool. Next one here, we got the side cut. So again, you're looking down at your ski, you kind of look at the shape of it. You know, what's the shape that it has? Like, usually you have the tip of the ski and it kind of tapers in, and, you know, in the center where your foot is, then it tapers a bit out to the tail. So there's different kinds. That's the majority. That's more of like a traditional ski design. And that is ideal for carving into your hard pack. There's also the reverse. So you have like your tip and then it flares out more and then comes back into the tail. And that's better for deeper snow. So you have less contact in your turns, so you can do more floating. And then there's also, again, multidimensional, which is more of like a hybrid style. And now you have the core construction. Now, so this is probably the most important thing, I would think, core construction, because it's what your ski is made of, like what the main guts of your ski is. And depending on what you're going to be using them for, the weight's going to be important.
I've actually heard some different theories on this from some of the people in ski shops that we've talked to. They say after a few years, certain type of construction will lose spring in it. So depending on how they're cambered, so that's the bowing out. If you set a ski flat down, it bows up in the middle. So it's kind of, that's the cambering. So they actually say that actually deteriorates over time depending on the type of wood or material that it's constructed out of. So all this stuff plays into like how the ski reacts over time too, which means, you know, you need to change your skis every 2 years or so.
Yeah. Every 15 minutes, new skis.
15? That's right.
So with your core material, know, the port, again, depending on what kind of ski, what you're going to be using it for, this is really important. So there's the, usually you're starting with a wood, and there's different kinds of woods that are used. So Paulownia, that's known to be the most springy and lightweight, and it's usually found in backcountry skis. And what they'll do is they'll usually add carbon or metal to increase the strength. But that's going to be the majority of your ski, and it's going to keep it nice and light. And then bamboo, similar, but it's it's the next heaviest one up. And it requires a lot of glue, though, apparently. So aspen wood, again, lightweight, high energy. Poplar is also very similar to aspen. And then you get into the heavier woods. You have like a fir, which is lighter than maple but heavier than aspen. And the nice thing about when you get to these heavier woods is they're better for absorbing vibrations. So you'd think usually, oh, I'm going to get the lightest ski I can possibly get. Yeah, it's great, but you're going to get a lot of that chatter and a lot of vibration if you're going at high speeds. So that's where those heavier woods come into play. They're able to absorb a lot more of that better. But unfortunately, they tend to be a little less forgiving, though, because they are heavier, and you got to have a little more strength to get them back on track if you're getting yourself into a little bit of trouble.
But on the East Coast, you want to have steel skis, right? Just all steel. Entire steel.
Steel's the way to go.
Or titanium. Crush right through everything.
Yep. So then you have ash, maple, and then beech is the most rigid. So that's some of the woods you're going to find in your skis. And then, you know, there's also things that they add for strength and to reduce vibrations, beef up rigidity, titanol, I think it's called, an aluminum alloy.
I'm still blown away by Paulownia. I looked it up. I'm like, I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, right. And you look it up, then you start seeing them in all the different skis. You're like, oh, it's always been in there. Yeah, that's been something they've been using for a while now.
They say it's very present from China, but they say they use it a lot in surfboards and boats.
Oh.
Like, I had no idea. Never even heard of that.
Yeah. Good stuff. So also, fiberglass. It's more affordable than Titanol. Provides similar results. And one of the things that was cool about it is that the strength of the fiberglass is correlated to the way it's weaved. So there's a couple different ways to do it, the biaxial and triaxial. So it denotes the number of ways the fibers are running. So it's almost like you have the triaxial, you have three fibers, one, and then three kind of weaving together. So it makes it a little bit stronger than the biaxial, which only has two going each way.
Well, just the material they use for the fiberglass, it's just all different. Like I have so I have an aluminum road bike. A bunch of my friends have carbon road bikes, and the carbon, the way they weave the carbon with everything in there, it's just totally different. Like, and it plays the same for fiberglass. It's really what they use in there. Like, you think, oh yeah, it's fiberglass, it's cool, it's the same thing. It's all different.
Yeah. And then last off is carbon, which, yeah, like you mentioned before, it's very high strength to weight ratio, but it's also very costly. So what they do is they often use these strips, which they call stringers. So instead of using a whole big piece, they'll just put these, you know, these stringer pieces, you know, with the wood to get that strength where they need it, where it's most important on the ski. There's all kinds of cool new techniques they've come up with to, you know, to get that best blend of strength and you know, weight, get that sorted out to give you the best skiing performance.
Good stuff.
Yeah. And then, like you mentioned before, the rocker and camber profile. So like a regular ski has an upward curve. So that means, you know, you can kind of look at it sideways, and it bows up a bit so that when you're skiing and making that turn, you have more of the ski touching the surface with the snow, so you have more contact there. And then you have the rocker, which is the opposite. It's kind of pivoted up so that you can initiate your turn through deep snow easier. Makes it easier to pivot. And then a lot of skis these days are doing the a hybrid, especially the free skis particularly, where they have the early rise in the tip and the tail, and the traditional camber in the middle. So I think one of the ski companies calls it the mustache profile.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the way the ski is shaped, It's kind of, yeah, it has the early rise and then it goes up and then down and back up. So it looks kind of like a handlebar mustache would.
Yeah, it's funny too. It's like, so as long as you know these terms and what they mean, like, you start talking to people, especially we talked to the guys at Hino's. Derek hooked us up, and he actually was showing us stuff and talking about the different skis. And he went through like construction and like how they tune them, and like, because he's been doing it for a long time, and they do a lot of racing skis and stuff. But just, when I demoed my skis, I know you had a different experience. Everybody has an experience when they find the right ski. But mine, I got on and I was like, oh, these are great. They handle well, they're jumpy, they feel a little springy. And then looking at the ski and talking to the people, they're like, well, it has a big camber, so it's bowed up in the middle, which gives you the springiness, but they're also directional. So they're cambered, but they're cambered and rockered, but they're also directional, meaning you have a right ski, left ski, where they're kind of bowed, like with a twist, so that when you're skiing, you edge better going one way versus the other. And you can flop the skis if you want a different experience too. So it's kind of, you definitely have to, that's where you got to really try your skis out and see what you like.
Yeah, it seems like the maintenance might be a little bit of a nightmare with something like that.
Yeah, they say you got to watch out too nowadays with the percent of edge. When you create the edges, you got to go by manual. Well, now you have the internet, which is a lot easier. You could just look up, well, what percentage should my edges be? But it depends on the ski. Manufacturers recommend different edges,
Yeah. All right. So now that you have all this knowledge, now you know when you see any of this information, it's not as intimidating as you think it is. At first, it does seem a little bit, daunting looking at the different measurements and the side cuts and the turn radius and all that is. But really, it isn't that bad. You can take a. I got most of this information from Freeskier and from Powder, kind of put it together. And yeah, I mean, it's cool. They have like diagrams and it shows you exactly what it is. And once you've tried a couple of skis and you look at the measurements, you can kind of see like, oh, you know what? I like this ski. It's got more of a hybrid rocker camber. It was this wide. It's got, this shape, side cut. And once you kind of figure that out, so you've been on a few and now you know the terminology. It helps you figure out what you like the best. What aspects are most important to you.
Yeah, I guess too, like, things have changed so much now. Like, you just pick up one of these magazines that they do the full review. And as long as you know what category you're looking at, they won't steer you wrong. They'll tell you the best skis, the top, 10 best skis in the category. And you can look and read through and say, oh, I'd like to try maybe this one, that one, the other one. And then go, you could probably pick out of there like three skis. And out of those three, one of them you probably love.
Definitely. That's the way to go. So speaking of that, so here are the skis of the year in accordance to a couple of different publications. So Powder Magazine, they listed their top three. And number one, and I must concur, Nordica Enforcer 93, Salomon GST 106, and the Moment Meridian, which I don't know if you've checked this ski out. I have looked
The
at this
moment.
ski every single day.
I
It
haven't
is
even
just
heard of the moment.
Moment is this really cool little ski company. I think they're out of
I haven't been in the moment. I'm not in the
is
moment.
it Mount Rose? Like they're out by Reno, I think.
Wow.
Let me take a look. Make sure I'm not miscalculating or saying the wrong
Well, what's
thing.
interesting too is how the different magazines will break them down differently. So they're basically doing about the same type of analysis on the ski. So when they ski it, they'll rate it on the handling, on all the and then they'll put it into a category. But they break up those categories differently. So it's kind of cool to see like different magazines and how they rank them. Because I was telling Brian, Ski Magazine has them based on the like East Coast Powder, East Coast Groom, East Coast Powder, West Coast Groom, West Coast Powder, All Mountain. So they have them in different categories and then they break them out that way. So it's kind of like it helps you if you're looking from that point of view. where Powder Magazine breaks them out by different categories and Free Skier breaks them out all different categories, you know, like different what to look at. So it's kind of interesting to see the differences and kind of look at a few sets of ratings to figure out which ones you might want to try.
Yeah, that's a good way to go. Yeah, so Moment, they are out of Reno, Nevada.
Oh.
Yeah, they're the Meridians are just such cool looking skis. I was looking at the Bibbies too, that they're on my list of skis to check out this year.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, the Bibby Pros, they're nice. Because again, I think I know. Again, I have an idea of what I'm looking for. I want something that's West Coast, you know, prominent. If I had East Coast powder, I'd use them there too. Something probably in the 105 to 115 range. Don't want it to be super, super heavy. I'd like to do a little bit of backcountry with them, but not a dedicated touring ski. So,
well, there was, I remember last year I demoed, there was Cardinal skis out of, they were right outside of Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Handmade wood ski, beautiful skis.
Oh, Parlor.
And they, Parlor, that's what it
was. Parlor, yeah.
Parlor skis. And they had them on a demo day. So I took them out, but it was like freaking icy, horrible conditions. And I skied them, and I've skied enough different skis to know I tried those skis. I was like, these would be a dream in powder, but this is just the wrong mountain, wrong conditions for them. So I'm glad I tried them because I got to feel like they were light. They could glide on any little, you know, patches of powder that I did find. They would be awesome. So it's something like that you see. You're like, oh, these would be a great powder ski, whereas something else is more of an all mountain, you know. And that's when you start really seeing the difference too, just trying them.
Yeah, it's always you know, a risk for the ski companies too who run those demos, because you know you have a terrible conditions one day and they're running a demo. You try them out, and you're like, oh, these skis suck. It's like, well, no, they don't suck. It's just it was the wrong day at the wrong time to try that particular ski out.
Yeah, it's crazy.
All right, so did you list all the Ski Magazine ones?
Well, Ski Magazine, I kind of just looked for trends. I didn't really they had a lot of the same ones. So the Enforcer, very highly rated. The Blizzards, very highly rated. K2s were very highly rated too. They were up there. And then you had, which I thought was interesting, they actually said they had a write-up, and they said a lot of the powder skis, they said a lot of people are looking for something that maneuvers more. So they're actually starting to change the profile. Some of the companies are looking at changing the profile of the powder skis. So I thought it was interesting because it's kind of like you want to start carving in powder now. You know, like you want that different profile to be able to maneuver. But yeah,
people,
I mean, the
expect
Rossi
more. Yeah, every year they expect their skis to do more. You know, like everyone's kind of aiming for that perfect one quiver ski.
Yeah, exactly. But the three companies that I saw at the top of most of the list were Nordica, Blizzard, and Head. The Head Monster series, the Nordica Enforcer series is like tops. Blizzard's been up there. And then, you know, you have your Rossi's, your Atomics. I tell you what, I rented Atomics when I was in Italy, and they were phenomenal. But they were definitely carving skis. K2s, I demoed those in Jackson Hole. They were great. Armadas, we had Armadas in Telluride. They were phenomenal. So it just depends. But I saw definitely, if you look at the trend in Ski Magazine, I noticed Nordica, Blizzard, and Head were tops in terms of like companies. Vocals were up there, Rossi, and then, you know, some of the other ones, Stukely, K2s, they were mixed, but like in every category, those three brands, I think, were pretty good. So.
Yeah, again, you got to figure out exactly what you're looking for. So Free Skier, they broke their categories out a little differently. So they did it free ride, freestyle, women's, and park. So for Free Ride, they had the 90 to 99 millimeter, and number one was the J Skis Master Blaster.
Oh, weren't they the one that did the Kickstarter?
Were they?
Was that the one to date the intern?
Oh no, that was a different company. J Skis is a J Skis are the J Leventhal, the guy who started Line.
Oh,
he kind of broke away after he sold to K2. and started his own company. And I think last year was the first year. So yeah, he put out his own ski. So his Master Blaster got rated number one. 100 to 114 free ride, Nordica Enforcer 100s. 115 millimeter plus free ride, Black Crows Anima. A-N-I-M-A. Not like enema.
Anime.
Like enema, but spelled A-N-I-M-A. So not enema.
Anima. Anima with an A, not an E. You're not getting an enema. Maybe you want an enema. I don't know.
It's like animal without the L.
The snow enema is better than not having a snow, not having the snow to have a snow enema. Just saying.
That's what she said, I believe.
Still not good either way.
All right. 90 to 99 millimeter freestyle, Armada ARV 96. 100 to 114 millimeter freestyle, Blizzard Gunsmoke. So these I'm very interested in too. I want to check those out. 115 millimeter plus freestyle, Armada JJ 2.0. So women's, it's the Armada ARW 88. And for the park, Faction Candide 1.0. So
wow.
If you want to ski like Candide, Theroux does the skis to get, apparently.
Huh. Yeah, I'm looking up the Blizzards now. I think they're changing up all the...
Are they changing the line? Because, was it originally the... what was the one they were called?
The Brahma Bonafide Cochise, and then they introduced the Black Pearl, I think it was.
The
Black Pearl. And then, so now they have different ones. So they're probably going to change the naming of the line. And most companies do that. They keep it for a while, and then they start changing.
Yeah, they always kind of got to keep things fresh.
Got to keep it fresh. You can't have the same.
Got to keep it fresh, yeah.
Because we're going out there, we're like, I've demoed those. Yeah, I want to try them again.
Yeah, they make some good stuff. Yeah, and those Gunsmokes, based on the reviews I read on a couple different websites, those seem like they could be at least what I'm looking for this year to pick up. So, we'll definitely keep you guys in the loop, let you know what we're looking at.
Oh, there's the Gunsmoke.
They're pretty sweet, right?
Oh, they have. Okay, so it looks like they're coming out with some different ones. They have still the regular one. Oh, there's some different ones. Spur, Bodacious, Bonafide, Cochise, Brahma, Latigo I've seen, Shiva, Black Pearl, I think I've seen those. The Cheyenne, the Gunsmoke, the Peacemaker, the Regulator. Yeah, and then the other Cochise. Wow. Yeah, Gunsmoke's a free ride. That's why. Yeah, they're all free ride, but Gunsmoke looks pretty cool. Black and white and gray.
Yeah, they're very cool.
114 underfoot. Wow.
Yeah, they're a good size. They're a girthy gal. All right.
Peacemaker 104 underfoot. Yeah, those look pretty cool too. Yeah, we're gonna have to start checking out some of these other ones. I'm interested in the Nordica, which other ones they got, because they have the Enforcer 93s, and then the other ones they have the fatter Enforcers, which were highly rated on the.
Those were the original Enforcers. When they came back out last year, that's all they had was the Enforcer was just the 100. And then for this year, which came out in January, they came out with two different sizes.
Oh, nice.
The 93 and the 100. But the 93s, they are a blast. East Coast.
But how did you get this year's skis last year, Brian?
Because I live in the future. That's why. I'm people who know people.
And you're like talking to them in the shop. You're like, I'll send you, give you my email, send me a note. And they called you. You're like, you bought them right on the phone, didn't you?
I'm getting some 2018 skis next month. So, future. You don't want to mess with me.
That's right. Doc Brown's coming back. You're getting skis in the future. Future skis.
Those automatic press a button, your bindings lock.
Mr. Future Skis.
Trams, where we're going, we don't need trams.
Yeah, why do we still have button? Why do we still have to like boot in? Should just press a button. Just saying.
Why can't we have comfortable boots like the snowboarders do?
If we're ever gonna make it to Mars, we gotta have like push button boots. I'm just saying.
What's going to happen first is those SpaceX rockets have to stop blowing up. That's the first step of getting to Mars.
Well, they're going through the blow. This is part of the blowing up phase. And then after they hit the blowing up phase, they get the flying phase. So
yeah.
It's kind of just, you know.
The blowing up phase is not a fun one, though.
No. Usually they have unmanned blowing up phase. So that's good that it's unmanned.
Yeah. So yes, I guess that wraps up the our skiing info for this episode. So if you guys
knowledge dropping,
a lot of good stuff here. So we'll post all this stuff on the show notes. You guys want to check it out, and if you have any other tips, advice, or any information you want to share, hit us up skibumpodcast.com, skibumpodcast@gmail.com, and all of our social media: twitter.com/skibumpodcast, facebook.com/skibumpodcast. Instagram.com/ski bum podcast, and something on Pinterest, highfalutin ski bums. Boom.
Boom.
All right. Now it is time for the ropes. Mario, start us out. What do we got?
All right. So we're talking about highfalutin ski boats.
Highfalutin what?
Ski boats. I'm talking houseboats. But we're using it for skiing. I'm going to take a houseboat on a river near a ski area. I don't know. We're going to do it somehow. But Rev House makes these luxurious houseboats. They're pretty freaking baller. I got to say that there's got to be one with a helicopter pad on there. I mean, something for our style. Because you want to be able to, like, park it in Alaska and fly from your helicopter from the houseboat out to ski and then come back.
What about if there's a way, like Lake Tahoe, if there's a way to – have a cable set up, like a private, like a private
gondola.
Yeah, you can go from the houseboat and just have it like connect, like merge right onto the regular gondola line.
That would be pretty badass,
right?
You know, these houseboats are really good, like out west, like Arizona, like where the climate's really Utah, pretty nice. So anyway, so welcome to a life less ordinary. So infinite freedom, endless possibilities, no compromises. Because if you have the money to buy one of these boats, you're not compromising on a goddamn thing. So the website, they do a decent sales pitch, but I'd like to see more. And then we started looking at like images of Rev House houseboats. And some of them look pretty badass. They have, when you have Hublot and Hublot, the watch company, and was it Ferrari?
Ferrari, yeah.
We have those two like coming together to make a joint houseboat themed on their brands. I got to say that's pretty highfalutin.
I mean, they have like almost 1,100 square foot verandas, or whatever you would call it, like the deck where you just can have a, you know, a big dining room, or I guess like picnic table and couches. And I mean, these things, they're nicer than most people's houses inside and outside.
If you're in like the New York metro area, you park this right off of Manhattan, winter comes, you just move that shit down south, just roll it down. That's it, we're rolling shit up. Drop, you know, roll up anchor, let's go.
You can get a sauna, a hot tub, a fireplace. Rev House offers you limitless luxury.
Yeah, they're showing like the bathroom in there. I'm like, this is a nice apartment. And it's like, no, there's a lady sitting on the veranda there in a robe, and the water's right behind. I'm like, that's pretty badass.
I think it'd be cool for like a year to live on a houseboat and kind of document the experience. I went down a rabbit hole one night online, and I just started doing like houseboat living. And, you know, at first it was like, oh, yeah, it's cool, it's great. And then you hear like the stories of like, yeah, I'm divorced and we have a kid. And my kid came to stay with me on my houseboat. And he's like, they're like, as a six-year-old, they were super excited, you know, that they got to go on daddy's house is a boat also. But then you realize it's kind of awful. And there's a lot of usually water damage and smells and problems and – but now, Rev House style, that's a whole nother can of corn there. This is the high-end, luxurious way of doing things.
Well, if you could afford one of these, you're having somebody maintain all that for you.
Oh, yes.
You're not giving a crap. Like, you're saying, oh, I'm going to stay at a hotel while somebody, you know, scrape the barnacles off of the houseboat because, yeah, I don't really care.
You're staying at the Fairmont.
Right, exactly. Yeah, there's got to be, like, different, like, I mean, think about it. You don't have a normal sewer system. You don't have a normal, like, facilities are different. You know what I mean? So.
Oh, big time.
It's got to be nice, though. You go out, sit on, you know. I think I was telling you, Brian, my cousin went to Lake Powell, and I guess that's one of the places where they have a lot of houseboats. And you're going through like these canyons on this houseboat, and you go for like, you just float down, and you anchor every once in a while, but it's like a nice calm river, like a lazy river, and you're just going on a houseboat, and there's other people in houseboats, and you talk to people, and you hang out, you have some wine, you grill out, you relax, and it's just very relaxing and peaceful. And you go down, you float for like, you know, a few days to a week, and it's supposed to be really, really cool. And I could see this being as one of those baller places, but I'm thinking Alaska, maybe the North Sea, maybe putting one of these bitches out there. You go have one of these in the North Sea. Now I'm buying one. You go through a, you know, North Sea winter. Now I got a little more respect.
I think nice having one of these in Lake Tahoe. That would be pretty awesome.
That'd be pretty bad. I'm wondering where you would dock it though. Because Lake Tahoe, I'm sure everybody owns all the places you would be able to dock it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Hey, you just go up to, you pull up to somebody and be like, hey, you can come party on the boat if you let me dock here for a couple days.
There you go.
Yeah. I guess the hardest thing is getting it out of the water and taking it elsewhere. That seems to be probably a pretty complicated endeavor.
Strap on those engines and start rolling that shit down. You're not taking it out. You're riding it wherever you go.
So it's like amphibious houseboat?
Amphibious.
Amphibious.
Amphibious. That's like one day you're in one port, the next day, oh, I moved today, guys. I'm at a different address down the road. Every day move a little bit. Look for me 2 blocks down from where you found me yesterday.
It's the way to do it. All right. Next story up. So now, today is Thursday, September 8th, and today is also the first day of the NFL season. So thank God football is back. That means the fall is coming, and it means it's almost ski season. So now
– 21-17 in the fourth quarter right now. We got a game.
Who's winning?
Denver.
Denver? Wow. Rookie quarterback.
They were losing before.
It's the quarterback's first freaking game. He's never thrown a pass.
Watch, Cam Newton's going to light it up for another 300 yards.
He'll do nothing.
Oh, just like boom.
Just like the Super Bowl. He'll do nothing.
Boom, caught right. It. And a play. Anyway.
Anyway, so this article on Motherboard talks about, well, how do you watch football if you're a cord cutter? So it's got a couple of cool, nice little tips here. So,
oh, I know how to watch it.
Well, then you can interject in the story then. So three ways to watch it. Number one. Use an antenna. Super
exactly
old school.
What you do.
But yeah, you get a good reception with an antenna, and you'll get multiple games on Sunday, nationally broadcast Sunday night game on NBC, your home team's Monday night football games, and 10 Thursday night games on CBS and NBC.
Oh, they're broadcasting this year on – oh, see, they weren't doing that last year. They were doing the – Thursday night games were either NFL Network or ESPN.
Yeah, they changed that now.
Ah, it seemed better. I get more
so
shit.
It's just, yeah. So,
and it's not like a old school antenna like rabbit ears. They have like these new modern digital antennas. I get the game in crystal clear, just as if I had HD. It's in HD. It comes in.
Yeah, that's the thing most people don't even realize is that yeah, the signals are in HD.
Yeah.
So you're getting a really high quality stream
for free.
Next, you can log into the apps for different networks. So you can go on to watch ESPN for Monday Night Football, NBC Sports for Sunday Night Football and several Thursday night games, and Fox Sports Go for Sunday regional NFL games.
NBC Sports, from my past experience, I think they try to charge you.
Well, they say, here's the rub. You have to log in with your username and password from a pay TV provider.
Right. So if you have a friend, which I do, that has that, you get there. If they're willing to, if they're a good enough friend, they share the user ID and password with you.
Yeah.
Then you can log in and get you're all sharing the same service.
Exactly, yes. another thing
I've
you
heard,
do.
I've heard people do it with HBO as well. I don't know
allegedly,
who, I'm just saying.
Perhaps.
Allegedly. Yes.
Another thing you can do, now Twitter has made an agreement with the NFL, so they're going to broadcast 10 Thursday night games on Twitter this year. So,
that's freaking awesome.
Yeah, so you can go to, I think they have on their website, or let's see.
I'm going
there's
on
a
there.
Link.
Going on right now.
There's a, yeah, I think it, they'll list what, well, they're talking about in that video I just shut down. Yeah, they're talking about which games they're going to broadcast. So on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, number four, there is find a pirated stream. And, of course, that's at your own risk. A lot of times there's connectivity issues, poor quality, pop-ups, blah, blah, blah.
Save not if they have Kodi TV, I'm just saying.
Kodi's an option as well.
Kodi.
And then there's some other options that are not free, but they're cheaper than usual cable. And one is Sling TV, which is a live streaming service, and it's about $20 a month, and that includes ESPN. And then
Sling
they have
been around for a long time, right?
They have been around. It's one of the most legit services, and there's a couple different packages they have. Like you can buy like the Red Zone package for like $5 more. So it's I think it's a little more a la carte than regular cable.
Yeah.
So that's worth checking out. PlayStation View, if you have a PS4, you can use that. It's similar to Sling TV. It's monthly fee of $29.99. You can stream live cable channels without the cable contract.
Okay.
Yeah. It's got CBS, Fox, and NBC in some markets, not all of them, though.
If well, I think it's hilarious because the game stations now, like if I was in college again, like I had an Xbox or a PS4, like, that's all I would need. I would need anything else, you know.
Yeah, pretty much. Vidgo. So this one isn't out yet, but rumors are indicating that Vidgo will be launching the NFL Network and a bunch of other channels that should make football watching pretty easily. Another one is Watch with a VPN. So NFL offers its own streaming service, NFL Game Pass, which provides access to the entire regular season. Unfortunately, it only lets you watch games on demand. So unless you're someone who has to work on Sundays and can't watch until later, it's probably not a great option. If you're international, though, that might work out all right.
Oh, yeah. What was that service that – oh, Arrow. Remember the Arrow service that went to court?
Yeah.
So the idea was
that
they were
antenna
streaming –
company, right?
Yeah, they were streaming HD antennas over the internet from the market that they were in. So they weren't giving you anything. Yeah, you were paying for their service, and all they were doing was streaming the antenna-free content. It was the weirdest thing.
Yeah, they were always in some sort of court case, it seemed like.
Yeah, because they were
Aereo, isn't that what it's called?
Aereo, yeah.
Aereo.
So they wound up losing, but it was a genius concept, and they did it for how many years? It was a few years.
Yeah, they ceased operations in 2014.
I heard that was awesome, too.
Yeah.
They had where you can get an antenna feed, or you could have a dedicated antenna where you actually pay for an antenna in a certain market, and you're getting that TV from there.
Yeah, it was a good idea.
They didn't lose money because they couldn't prove that there was a loss to the companies because they were actually carrying the entire feed. So they weren't cutting out commercials. So they were saying, well, you guys didn't pay us to carry your commercial. We're still carrying it. So once they did that, they're like, okay, just shut down.
Yeah, right.
That was awesome, though.
Yeah, so those are some ways you can make or enhance your NFL viewing season this year.
I like that. I'm going to have to look at that because I don't usually get on Twitter a lot, except for the podcast. So I got to look at streaming stuff. I am a cord cutter, so I don't have anything. But I kind of go on the motto of I'm in the New York market, so I'm going to get the Jets and Giants. Sometimes I'll get a Philly game. So usually on the weekends, I get at least 3 to 4 games, and then I get the Sunday night game, and then every once in a while the Monday night or the Thursday night. Now this year it looks like I'm going to get the Thursday night, and – the Saints. So there's a lot of there's a lot of different games I'm getting for free just with an antenna. And then if I want something else, I'll go out to a bar and watch all the games on at once.
That's always an option too.
Yeah.
That's a good one they didn't list on here. Just go to the bar.
Go to the bar. I use the bar as my extended living room. Like, they have food, they have drinks. I don't have to cook anything. I just order stuff and like somebody brings it to me. Like, it's worth going out.
Like having a butler and a cook.
Exactly. Exactly. And then I'm a little bit cheap, you know, because I'm still a ski bum at heart. And so I go out there and, you know, they know me. They're like, okay, you know, just, you know, drink beers, like normal beers, and not like, you know, eat all fancy and stuff. So that keeps me going for, you know, a game and a half, and then I'm out of there.
Nice.
All right. Next up, we got one of America's famous highways is about to become an awesome science experiment. So Route 66, which I've been on, love Route 66, they're actually going to turn it into the first green solar highway in the world. And what they're doing is they have these panels that they're made of glass with embedded solar in them, and they assemble them. They're like these hexagonal, like giant, almost like big pavers, and they can put them on the roadway and they'll generate electricity. So they said they're going to put them on Route 66 to test out, you know, the efficiency and how they work. But it's a pretty cool concept because they're saying like road lights and signs that are lit today, they can light from these, you know, solar roadways, which Route 66 just sits out in the middle of the sun and just bakes all the time. So you have sun hitting it like all the time. It's a perfect opportunity to put like solar, you know, on those surfaces. So I think if they did that with that, you know, Route 66, they could do that with a lot of different highways. So I think it's a pretty cool concept.
Yeah. So does it say where they're going to, what they're going to do with that solar energy they capture from that?
They said they're going to use it for initially for like some of the signs and lights along the route. And then they're going to see how well it does to see like, can it generate, which they're thinking it could scale up very quickly by just adding more of these tiles. And then if it scales up, then they're talking about maybe putting stuff back into the grid in the local areas and actually being like this unused, untapped source of energy. So they're saying that with a very conservative calculation, if all the roads and walking surface in America were covered with solar panels, with these solar panels in specific, at least the technology they have today, they generate three times as much energy as we use.
Wow.
Like in the U.S.
That's crazy.
So you could shut down the power plants and you'd have a surplus of energy.
No more nuclear meltdowns or reactions.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they're saying. Who knows how much they've, you know, tweaked these numbers, but they're saying the panels are intelligent, meaning they could be programmed to act as roadway signs and be changed as needed to alert drivers to animal crossings and downed trees. So I guess they could be programmed to collect energy and also like show like lights and stuff like that. So it just seems really pretty cool. They're also saying they can be heated up in the winter. So I guess the way they program them, they collect the light, store the energy, and then they could be programmed to emit the energy back out and heat up the roadway so they could prevent ice from forming.
Oh, so that's awesome.
So they're saying that like this is opening up a huge area of just like possibilities based on what they want to put. So they're saying, you know, that glass panel, and glass, if anybody doesn't know, glass is like one of the sturdiest, but if you make glass the right way, it could be one of the sturdiest things in the world. They're saying it's a little bit more expensive than asphalt, but they're saying potentially it could last a lot longer than asphalt. So, you know, they could be worn down over time, but the replacement of them would be mainly just, you know, replacing these tiles versus like laying pavement on a whole roadway.
Yeah. A lot of that highway too, 'cause it runs from Chicago to Santa Monica, California. you know, a lot of that roadway is in the, you know, in the south, so it's not going to have that hot extreme heat to extreme cold that we get in northeast that causes the roadway to break up and need so much repair or potholes, you know, cracking. So this
Yeah.
seems like it's got some pretty sweet potential.
What I like about this story too is, you know, it seems really cool and it's great, but it's not like they had to go in and sell like the local politicians on putting this together and funding it, because they raised over $2 million on Indiegogo, which they wanted to raise $1 million to get partnering with the Missouri Department of Transportation to launch this inaugural project. And they raised like twice as much to at least run this project. So they actually self-funded this Department of Transportation project for Missouri, which I think is amazing.
That's so cool, yeah.
So it'd be cool to see how this comes out. I mean, like we were talking before, even if they did the middle line, which nobody really drives over that much, if they do just that one middle line, now you're talking about a huge stretch miles of just this solar panel going on, you know? I mean,
Yeah.
it's crazy.
Lot of potential there, especially yeah, like you said, that's in that southwestern, southwestern part of the US where there is so much sun. And you know, there's a lot of potential to just, yeah, take advantage of that resource.
I just like how they start working out the numbers. Like, it could fund the support and maintenance of the highway itself. So it would be like a self-sufficient highway. Like, you wouldn't have to worry about like, oh, you know, we need like another $1 trillion to maintain our roadways. Like, no, they're making money already, so we're good. We don't need money for that. Use the money somewhere else.
Yeah, they can use it to, use the energy to run Bitcoin servers and start earning Bitcoin that way.
That's right. Well, and then we could use that extra money to, you know, keep the government from shutting down and Atlantic City from going bankrupt.
And for building the wall.
And building the wall. That's right. We're going to need
It
that. That money, that the wall's not going to fund itself
just got
unless
20 feet higher.
now I know how the wall's going to fund itself.
Now you know.
Boom, wall. You're solar now. You're a solar wall.
Trump panels.
Trump
They're better than solar panels.
panels. Yeah,
I don't
Trump
know where they're made, but they're great. Trump panels, the best.
The best. Most luxurious solar panels on the earth,
Yeah,
on the planet. Yeah, why doesn't Saudi Arabia, like, they're in a desert. They should have solar panels everywhere.
because they got oil they got to sell to everybody.
I know. They're just like burning oil. Like, we don't need it, but we're just burning it because we have it.
We have to develop scarcity.
Yeah. They're
We're gonna burn
like, here you go, America. We just want to show you how we don't really care. I leave the lights on all the time.
it.
What do you think, sheep? I leave every light on in the house all the time. How do you like that, America?
All day, every day.
All day. You went on vacation. All the lights are on. TV's on all the time. Damn it. That would make my father like roll in his grave.
Oh, wasteful.
Thermostat on, the windows open,
Terrible.
air conditioning running.
Yeah,
Damn it. Damn you. You know how much that would bother like older people?
every
Like
damn
that.
TV is on.
Can't you shut a light off in this place? I remember
Yeah,
getting yelled at like so many times when I was little.
it's
And now I'm just like that. I'm like, oh no, I got the air programmed. I'm the cheapest man on earth.
okay. All right. So that's gonna wrap it up for the week. Thank you so much again for listening. We really appreciate it. Please go to iTunes, subscribe, and rate us. And check us out, skibumpodcast.com. Send us an email, skibumpodcast@gmail.com, twitter.com/skibumpodcast, facebook.com/skibumpodcast, instagram.com/skibumpodcast. We'll keep posting all of our summer adventures, do any cool new news. We'll let you guys know and check out the show notes. And we will see you guys next week.
Peace. Stay happy. Stay fluting.
See ya.